from the campus of the University of Pennsylvania Wharton School.
This is Your Money on Business Radio.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to Your Money, Sirius XM, Channel 132, Business Radio, of course, powered by the Wharton School. I'm Kent Smithers. We have new episodes of the show premiering every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern. We're still not taking your live calls. Sorry about that. But if you're looking for a financial advisor I like, you can always go to my website, kentonmoney.com. I have a list of advisors that are personally screened for my approach to the fee only, as well as low-cost passive index investing. Again, kentonmoney.com. It's obviously a frustrating financial environment for many people, whether you're just someone who's, you know, worked and saved up all your life for retirement and you're wondering if those savings are going to be diminished by inflation, or you're just starting to do that right now as a younger person. Your stock market up and down, inflation rising, and all those things. And so my guest today is one of our returning favorites. He's published a book called Spiraling Up, Discovered Financial Serenity, Make Work Optional, Live Happily in Retirement. Steve Medlin is a certified financial planner and co-founder of Tabor, T-A-B-R, Capital Management, the only financial planning firm in Orange County, California. Welcome back to the show, Steve.
Thank you, Ken. It's great to be here again.
Yeah, and before we dive in, any of the fires and so forth affecting your area?
No, not this year. Last year, yes. They definitely did, though. Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about the inspiration for writing your book, Spiraling Up. Obviously, a bit of a play on spiraling downward, but you're saying we can kind of go upward as well. What are the synergies there?
Yeah. So, the original inspiration was we work with some great savers, investors, people who've been very successful. And they've gotten to a point where they make work optional. So I had started to write a book about making work optional. Yeah. And that kept leading me back to the same question. Well, why do you want to make work optional? Is it, you know, spend more time with family? Is it for travel, adventure, contributing, contribution? So that led me to a discussion of values, which led me to, values are just what's important to you. And then the principles that I talk about in the book are those principles that allow you, they sort of serve it as guidelines to connect your values with your actions.
Yeah. And so the spiraling up terminology, I mean, certainly talking about some of those principles and values. So what are your, you know, the challenges to reaching financial success? I mean, there's certainly a lot in there about working and saving and so forth.
Yes. Yeah. The four main areas that I discuss in the book are, one of them is consumer culture. We're almost programmed from birth to want to spend more than we earn. And so there's that phenomenon with keeping up with the Joneses, and that makes it difficult to save enough to begin investing. That all ties in with the media and social media. We're given these messages that we should value certain things that may not be really consistent with our values. Mm-hmm. And then something that you focus on your show a lot is the changing retirement landscape. You know, we don't have a system now where most people get a pension where they can retire. We have to do it ourselves. And many of us have these sort of limiting beliefs. You look at what's been happening in the market for the last 6-7 months, and a lot of people just think, well, why should I even bother? You know, why should I bother saving and investing if the market's just going to go down and they could lose it?
Yeah, it's certainly, and sometimes people are, you know, given advice that's not always appropriate either in terms of investments and about, hey, mostly focus on, you know, expected returns instead of really thinking hard about risk and appropriateness of taking risk. But, you know, still, of course, we want people to be saving. That's a separate question, of course. So, you know, let's talk about financial security. You call it independence, freedom, and serenity. In particular, we often don't think of serenity as we don't hear that word a lot in this space. Mm-hmm. We hear about, you know, financial security, independence, things like that. What is serenity in terms of how is it different than security and independence and freedom?
Sure. Yeah. I view it as kind of a pyramid. You know, the base of the pyramid is financial security. That's where you're just meeting your needs. You have a solid cushion and you have a plan to achieve your goals.
Yeah.
Financial independence is kind of the next level up, where you have your passive income meeting your needs, where work is no longer required. At that point, work is optional. Financial freedom is, to me, it's the next step above that. That's where the passive income is covering your ideal lifestyle. And then financial serenity, that's where the reason I use that term is there are a lot of people who've been successful with their investing, and they've maybe achieved financial freedom, but they still don't really feel very free. They don't have that sense of serenity. So the way I define financial serenity as that's something sort of internal, whereas those other terms are something external. You see it on your bank account. Financial serenity to me is living in a state of abundance, gratitude, and tranquility.
Yeah. It seems to me, you know, financial serenity is one of those things that, you know, where you talk about security, independence, and freedom, those are kind of stacked or layers. You know, you go from one, you know, try to get that security, try to get from there independence, and from there freedom. But serenity doesn't seem like a next layer, but it could be you know, almost layered throughout. In particular, you could, seems to me, have some financial serenity and still not necessarily have a lot of money.
Exactly. Yeah, no, it's a great point. I mean, someone who doesn't, you know, value that Gucci bag or the Lamborghini or whatever, they could make a decision where they're going to live a simple life. And as long as they have enough, you know, food, water, shelter, they could live in a state of financial serenity without having a large bank account or investment portfolio. And, you know, I sort of make the point in the book that while that is possible, it is for most people, it's easier to get to that feeling of financial serenity if you do those other things well, where you have that financial security and independence.
Yeah, yeah. You know, conversely, I've also known a lot of very wealthy people who I don't think ever had financial serenity. They're always, it was always the next fight that they had to worry about, and, you know, including people worth, you know, billions of dollars. So when you talk about spiraling up, you know, you discuss these seven principles of financial serenity. I mean, why don't you give us a quick overview of each of them?
Sure, sure. Yeah, and spiraling up, by the way, it's the way I view it is, you know, when you make one good financial decision, that leads to improved circumstances. And those improved circumstances lead to better opportunities. And that in turn leads to the next good decision. So that might sort of put it into context when we talk about these principles. A quick example of that, you know, spiraling up, say you have a car payment and you pay that off. That's the first good decision. That leads to the improved circumstances, which mean now you have, say, you know, an additional $500 a month of cash flow. And that leads to better opportunities, because when you have that additional $500 a month, you could either pay off other loans or you could invest in income producing assets. But either way, it's, you know, creating this kind of self-reinforcing virtuous cycle.
Yeah.
And as far as the principles go, the first few are sort of deal more with our inner worlds or mindset. Those are principle one is focusing on what you can control and ignoring those things. You know, if there's a change in tax policy, you can't really do anything about that new tax law. But what you can do is maybe research some alternative strategies to save on taxes. Principle two is accepting that wealth is a state of mind. Getting back to your example of, you know, billionaires who don't really feel like they have enough. Principle three is cultivating a growth mindset. So that's, you know, just believing that you have the ability to learn about your finances and to make good decisions that will help you in the long run, as opposed to a fixed mindset where you just think, you know, oh, some people are good with money and others aren't. And then the last four principles, they deal more with like solid financial practices and strategies. The principle four is understanding your personal financial statement. Principle five is using debt wisely and paying it off, something that you talk about quite a bit. And principle six is developing good financial habits, getting these things sort of on autopilot. So it's helping you achieve your financial goals. And then the last one is managing risk through things like estate planning and insurance, and just making sure with your investments that you're not risking more than you can afford.
Yeah. And speaking of investments, it certainly is sometimes challenging at times like this to get people into the market. And mm-hmm. of course, you know, they don't realize that cash itself is also very risky in the sense that, its value is eroded by inflation over time. So how do you get people to think, especially people who haven't invested so far, what type of advice are you giving them to try to get them at least get their foot in their toe in the water here?
Yes, it's really, it is a challenge, especially in difficult market environments like this one. But I think by having a long-term view, by doing a little bit of research, understanding that markets do go down, on average, maybe once out of every 4 years, there's going to be a negative return in the stock market. And if somebody knows that beforehand, they're more likely to be able to stick with a long-term plan.
Yeah. And so you finally, you've talked about in your book, the personal financial statement. And like, what is that and how is that different than like a financial plan? Or is it a similar idea? What does it all mean?
Yeah, the personal financial statement, it's something that every business has, and people who track these in their personal finances generally have much better outcomes. But it's two things. There's the income statement. So it's how much money is coming in each month, and you subtract out how much money you have in expenses each month. And the first goal is to get that, your expenses less than your income. Then you have money that you can use for savings and investing. And that sort of ties into the other part of your personal financial statement, which is your balance sheet. Your balance sheet is simply the assets that you have. So, if you own a home, that's considered an asset on your balance sheet. If you have an investment portfolio, that goes in one column. And then what you owe is going to be the mortgage. If you have a mortgage on your home, or if you've borrowed money for a car, and you subtract those two things, and you have your net worth, your assets minus your liabilities. The key is starting with the income statement and using that surplus cash flow to either pay off your debt or to invest in more income producing assets, because either way, that's going to go back to your income statement. It's going to improve your cash flow, which you can then use to improve your balance sheet.
Yeah. I mean, so in order to achieve that extra cash flow, I mean, there's how much do you recommend that people actually budget in a particular accounting receipts? And all? I mean, there's kind of two views on this. One is maybe you do that for a short period, but we know, budget fatigue will set in and you're not going to stick with it for very long. And the other view is, you just keep doing it and you just, persist and, counting all those receipts really kind of matters. I mean, I tend to, start off in the second camp and move to the first camp that says, hey, realistically people will stop doing it. And you just kind of want to automate your saving as much as possible. And then who cares what you spend the money on in terms of your consumption. But, that's not a hard, fast, view there. I mean, what are your own thoughts and how do you get the cash flow kind of positive?
Yeah, it is, asking somebody to fill out a budget worksheet, it's like asking them to go on a diet. It has a pretty negative connotation. Yeah. And you're right. It's hard to stick with those things. So there are some tools like Mint.com is a free online tool and there's other personal finance software where you can use that to sort of automate tracking your spending. But I take a broader view. One of the things that I have, one of the worksheets that I have in the book is a values worksheet, because I think that's extremely important to start with your values. And if you're saving up for that, you know, Lamborghini because you want to impress the neighbors, but it really doesn't light you up inside, then you could do you would do a lot better if you spent a little bit of time and just thought about what's important to you. Is it, you know, travel? Is it more time with family? And if you're spending your money on those things and ignoring the things that, you know, the media and social media are telling us we need to buy, I think that goes a very long way in helping. And then as long as, like you said, you know, you have your income, you're spending it on the things that you truly value, and you're keeping that below the your expenses below the income each month, then you're going to be in good shape over time.
Yeah, let me ask you, and I keep on saying final question, but I could certainly go on for a long time. When you talk to somebody and you say, hey, you know, why do you want that Lamborghini? I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not a car guy. I'm a much more outdoors type person. Give me a good fishing pole and a good hunting rifle, I'm pretty happy. But nonetheless, I think for those who are into that and you come to the conclusion that this is more of a status, keeping up with the Joneses type thing. We often mean that implicitly in a pejorative sort of ish way. Do people just kind of internalize that? Yeah, that's just my goal. I want to keep up with the Joneses. Or does it actually change them to say, you know what, you know, maybe that's all it is. And maybe that's not exactly a mature preference. And maybe I should, you know, tilt into something that has maybe more value, family, and so forth. I mean, having those conversations with people, do they ever really kind of change their goals in that way?
Yeah, and it's a great point. By the way, Lamborghinis are beautiful cars. I don't mean to pick on them. And for those who do, you know, if you're really into that, if a Gucci bag or a Chanel bag is your thing, whatever it is, if that's truly in your value system, then I say go for it. To me, it can be very eye-opening just to ask that question. You know, am I really doing this because this is something I view it as, you know, a work of art that I can own and I'll love and it will, you know, make me happy? Or am I really doing it to maybe, you know, impress people or, you know, for other reasons? So I think it's just having that awareness and asking those questions goes a long way in helping make those decisions.
Yeah. It's almost financial advisors these days are good ones. They're not just helping you with the nitty gritty and, you know, the accounting and so forth. They really are having these deeper conversations. One reason why I like the feeling advisors who aren't all about trying to get that commission associated with the investment. We're really trying to put you on taking a more holistic view and put you on a better path in life. And so, Steve, super articulate as always. Thanks so much for coming back on the show.
All right. Thank you, Kent. Great to be here again.
And you can find out more about Steve Medlin's new book. It's simply Spiraling Up, Discover Financial Serenity, Make Work Optional, and Live Happily in Retirement. Wherever you shop for books, you can just Google that, or you can go to Steve's website, which is stevemedlin.com. That's M-E-D-L-A-N-D. Again, stevemedlin, one word, .com. I'm Kent Simoes, Your Money. We'll be right back after this short break.
You're listening to Your Money
on Business Radio.